So, Ving.
Yeah?
The thing about babies is that their life cycle is pretty standard. About 9 months, give or take a few weeks in most cases.
Yeah.
Very, very often, though, there's an early release. not so much late releases like we're used in the software industry. So, it's safe to say that babies never really enter a development hell stage. I think that's called the terrible twos, actually.
Yeah, I suppose. Although I think if you talk to a pregnant woman, she might contest that development hell is the entire 9 months.
Oh no! Actually, in my wife's case, it wasn't too bad until about the last month.
Okay,
she started feeling pretty much done with the whole thing. It's like, yep, can't move, can't bend over, can't tie my own shoes, can't feeling tired a lot. So, all right, let's get this kid out.
I suppose. You got to make sure they're ready, though.
Yeah, they have to be like fully beta tested first.
Indeed. Oh, man. The first baby is the beta test baby, though, you know?
Right. Like, you got to practice and get all the bugs out for the rest of them. It's like, oh, all right, I've made all my mistakes in this one. I've got this now. Let's bring on version two.
Test baby. Were you a test baby? I was a test baby.
I was a test baby also, yes.
Yeah. But I turned out okay.
I don't know. We're grown men who play video games and do a podcast about it in our spare time.
Well, you know, everybody's got to have a hobby.
Do they?
So speaking of things that take 9 months to see the light of day, when's that new episode of Famicom Dojo coming out?
Well, I don't want to put a timeline on it. Except that when we're ready to go, it's going to happen. Like, the plan is we're going to release the next one in our sequence that should have been out after the Angry PC Engine Nerd. And then wait about a month, drum up a whole slate of new episodes, and then release those week after week until they are out. And we will be doing 5 to 8 more of those, depending on what we can get done. So we're trying to do something in a few weeks here.
Okay.
But don't hold me to that.
And that's the thing about development hell, though. No, you set these dates and you think you can do it, but then, maybe we should talk a little about what development hell is before we start putting it as an analogy for childbirth.
Sure.
That's when a game just keeps on being made, you know. And, you know, the date just keeps getting pushed back. And then, you know, you get to a point where, is it actually going to come out at all?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we know of the games that did come out after all, but, you know, there's a lot of them that didn't or got, you know, changed completely. We'll get into it more in a minute, but, I mean, of course, the most famous development hell story is Duke Nukem Forever.
Duke Nukem Forever. It really did take forever.
It was like 14 years or something?
Gosh. Somewhere around there. I think it was a teenager by the time it came out.
Oh, man. But I remember... No, I don't remember being incredibly excited about this game. I liked the first Duke Nukem. But
yeah, when I was 13 myself.
That was an amazing game. It was all the Evil Dead references you could possibly muster into a game without getting the copyright for it.
Yep.
Still better than any actual Evil Dead game ever made.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Well, I'll take that back. The Tower Defense one, the Army of Darkness Tower Defense game for the iOS, really good.
Well, to be fair, that came out after Duke Nukem Forever was finally released, wasn't it?
It's around the same time.
Oh, was it? Okay.
But anyway, yeah. So, well, I mean, the first Duke Nukem 3D game was released in 1996.
Wow.
And then they had, like, an expansion pack right away, like the Plutonium pack.
Okay.
That was, like, the same year, so everyone's like, wow, there's going to be a new one pretty soon, you know?
Right.
But... Well, I guess if you want to go farther back on Duke Nukem, do you remember the 2D platformers?
Actually, 3D was my first exposure to Duke Nukem, so I did some research on the internet.
Ooh.
And found out that there was earlier a 2D version, hence the 3D being what a lot of games did when the 3D thing became more prominent after Doom and Quake and whatnot.
Well, also it was the third game in the series.
Right.
Duke Nukem 2. Yeah.
It's 3D. I forget what other games did that little joke, but Duke Nukem 3D was the most popular one I can think of.
Too, yeah. But yeah, the original Duke Nukem game was like, I don't know, like several years earlier. It came out around the same time as Commander Keen.
Right.
And used a similar, though not the same, engine. Yeah.
Right.
And then, of course, Duke Nukem was ported to all kinds of stuff. So, I mean, it's not like there were no Duke Nukem games that came out. There were, like, re-releases and stuff like that. You know, there's a version on Sega Saturn, you know, N64, iPhone.
It was on N64?
And, there was Duke Nukem 64.
Oh, you're not talking about the 2D one anymore.
No.
Okay,
sorry.
I was confused.
I switched to 3D. You know what other platform the 3D one was on?
No.
I think I mentioned this before, but it was on game.com.
Oh.
The Tiger handheld, yeah.
Right.
You know, along with Resident Evil and, you know, Fighters Mega Mix and all kinds of games that should never have been on that thing. I don't know how they secured some of those licenses.
Right,
but
right.
But anyway. Yeah, Duke Nukem. And so from 1996 to last year, so that's a 15-year development time. That's crazy.
Well, you know, it took some other company to actually do it, though, because 3D Realms ended up folding, and we thought we'd never see this game come out. Duke Nukem 4, never. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was pretty sure we never would see that game. I mean, how could we, really? And, well,
yeah.
3D Realms still kind of exists.
Kind of. The people who were responsible for holding on to a game for 15 years are gone.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, they stopped the project, and what was it? Gearbox.
Yep, Gearbox.
Yep.
Famous for other ports such as Samba de Amigo for Wii.
Really? Gearbox did that?
Gearbox did that.
Oh, wow. Thank you, Gearbox, for bringing us the worst port of Samba de Amigo ever, and Duke Nukem 3D.
Is it their fault? You mean forever? No. Is it their fault that the Wii isn't really all that well suited to Samba? I don't think so.
It's not their fault. Well, I don't know. It was probably just an ill-made decision. Like if they would have released maracas for it, the Wii is fine. The Wii is definitely as capable as the Dreamcast.
It is larger
storage medium, the ability for downloadable content. It could have been a great game.
No.
Would it have sold well at all? No, but
No. I disagree entirely. Having reviewed this game already, it does not work well on the Wii. It's all position based, like orientation based and not position based. So it's actually pretty much impossible to play it the way you would the Dreamcast version.
No. You're not getting it. If they would have released maracas for it.
Oh, you mean the actual like ultrasound?
Yeah. Yeah, like Dreamcast maracas that you plug into, you know, a GameCube controller port.
Gotcha. That might have worked, but it would have suffered from the same problems the Dreamcast version of the peripheral had. It just go out of alignment after a while.
Well, yeah, but I would have played the crap out of that game.
I agree.
Me and 6 to 7 other people.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's not really Gearbox's fault. They tried to... And I don't know. I got it for $10, the game.
Oh wow! I paid full price for it.
Yeah, but you know how much longer you had yours than mine? About 3 weeks. I got it about 3 weeks after release for $10.
Great.
That didn't bomb. That thing cratered.
No kidding. Okay.
That's too bad, though.
It is too bad because I love Samba.
It is good music.
It was the first Wii game to have DLC.
Yes, it was. Way to go. Sorry. I know. DLC can be good.
Yeah. But yeah. So Gearbox brought us Duke Nukem Forever, but I never played it.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I didn't care.
You're not missing much. I played a demo of it.
Okay.
And that was enough. What was crazy was, like, I don't really play first-person shooters anymore. I haven't for years. Although, yesterday my brother and I did play GoldenEye Wii.
Oh, how is that?
You know what? It's pretty fun.
Wow.
It's pretty fun. Like, it's enough like the old one that you get the nostalgia vibes, but it's new enough that it's actually, like, a good game in its own right. I quite like it, actually.
Because it's not just a port, right? Like, apart from having to strip out the James Bond licenses they don't have any rights to use, they actually updated some things too, right? Or am I...
Yeah, the story's updated. Like, the old one, like, was kind of like... The first part took place in the Cold War, and then they update it, you know, like right. years later. But this one's quite a bit more modern from the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah, they changed the plot around a little bit, but like you still do the same things. You know, you go to the warehouse and blow up those tanks, and you know.
Okay.
Those like yeah, and I don't know. They added a lot of content actually.
Wow.
And it's got voice acting and stuff. It's quite good. Like
it's crazy.
For the price I paid for it, I think I. Bought it off Amazon for like $15.
Oh.
Definitely worth it. Definitely worth it.
Right.
Even as a full price title, I think it would be good. We didn't really delve into the multiplayer at all because I was having some battery issues. But
oh no, well the multiplayer is like the thing that's what got me really because
oh, yeah.
I played the single player at first, didn't even know there was multiplayer, and then when I found out, man,
well it's got 4-player split screen multiplayer, so
right.
But anyway,
well, it's that has to do with Rare, and we'll get back to Rare, I'm sure, later in the podcast.
Yeah. but anyway, I was playing Duke Nukem Forever, and I'm like, oh wow, I kind of know how to play this, you know, because it looks new. I mean, it's not the best looking. There's some clipping issues and stuff like that, but you know, it looks like a new game,
right.
But it plays like an old game.
Okay, what do you mean?
Like, it plays like, I don't know, something from like the Quake 2 era.
Oh, is that...
But I mean, like, it definitely feels like they tried to add on some modern nuances, you know, and stuff like that. But like, maybe, I don't know, my memory of different engines, because I pretty much stopped playing first-person shooters around the Duke Nukem 3D era, you know?
Sure.
So... You know, I'm not really sure what evolutionary things happened, but like it felt more like a throwback than a new game.
Right.
Not just in mechanics though, but also like I felt that I was now too old to be playing this game.
Oh.
It was kind of crass and, you know, and it was all about one-liners and stuff like that. And pretty juvenile, you know? And
I'm right,
like,
right.
15-year-old me would have eaten this up.
Yep, that and Clerks and all the kinds of things I liked when I was a kid.
Yep, but like 32-year-old me, yeah, I had a birthday last week. 32-year-old me looks at it and goes, I'm feeling a bit uncomfortable about this right now.
That stripper is someone's daughter.
Yeah. Oh, they grow up so fast.
Yep.
Poor, well, Princess Daisy had to make a living somehow. But anyway, that game was, everyone thought it was canceled. Like development hell, the reason for it was they had the best of intentions. They had games in that series like almost done.
Right.
But then they just kept going, you know what? Now that, you see, they wanted it to be the best thing ever, you know?
Big
mistake.
They wanted
it to be the nicest looking game of its generation. So they'd be making it and they're almost done and they're like, oh, other games have kind of caught up.
Right.
Well, let's add some more stuff. You know, let's just hold it back. Like, that's Miyamoto's philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've heard him saying, like, a bad game will be bad forever, but a delayed game will eventually be good, you know?
Yeah, but that's only true if it's Nintendo saying it because they actually release their games when they're done.
Yeah. or retool other people's games. Okay, we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a moment. Okay. It's hard to call the Nintendo games that were delayed being in development hell. But like Super Paper Mario was originally a GameCube game.
Sure.
And it came out for, you know, the Wii later. And Donkey Kong Bongo Blast came out as, like, Donkey Kong, I don't know, something. Because it was originally a GameCube game you'd play with the bongos, but they changed it to something you play by shaking the Wii remote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, like, they're delayed, or, like, the Zelda games, you know. It took forever for like, Twilight Princess to come out from being announced, you know. Any Zelda game, really.
Right.
Has never met a deadline. But, you know, but you feel that they really are actually making them better by holding them off, you know?
Right, right. I think the difference is that the secret here is not to try and make the best game ever and just make a really good game, because you can't make the best game ever because technology is always going to advance and something is going to surpass it eventually. It's just inevitable, so...
Yeah.
While they were working on this game, technologies and other companies just passed them by. And there was no way they were going to keep up.
Yep. And, that's the most famous story. But there's other examples. Do you know Silicon Knights?
Silicon Knights made one of my favorite games of all time, Eternal Darkness, which unfortunately was the first and only game of theirs I played. Okay, I take it back. I played a little bit. Actually, I watched someone play a little bit of their Metal Gear Solid remake.
The Twin Snakes or something?
Yeah, but that was the only other thing that I was aware that they had done. And I'm sure you're going to talk about it.
Legacy of Kain. Yeah, oh, but anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure we know the story of Too Human.
Well, I think everybody knows that Too Human missed a lot of deadlines on the Xbox 360.
Yeah,
but what a lot of people don't realize is that Too Human originally started its life as a PlayStation game.
Yeah,
and apparently it was fairly far along, like far enough along that there were demos. Well, not show floor demos,
right?
And then Silicon Knights kind of I don't know if Too Human ever went to N64, but it might have because. Silicon Knights became a second-party developer for Nintendo for a few years.
Yeah, I thought I remembered hearing that it was going to be an N64 title originally, which would be the same generation as the PlayStation, so it's possible. But I don't think N64 could have handled it, honestly.
I'd have to do some research. But then Too Human was in production for GameCube. And then I still don't exactly know what happened with Nintendo and Silicon Knights. Perhaps it was that their games took so long to come out. That Nintendo's like, this money could be best spent elsewhere. Like, Rare was gone then, too.
Oh, yeah. We'll get to that.
But yeah. So then it got moved to Xbox 360. Now, this is a long way away, like PlayStation to Xbox 360.
Right.
And, again, they were trying to make a great game, and they announced that it was the first game in a trilogy. That was probably unwise. And they released it to middling reviews.
Yeah, you know? Again,
I mean, it wasn't that it was a bad game. It was okay. I mean, I didn't play it. Nobody did, but
yeah, I didn't play it.
But the few people who did play it, the reviews were that it was a pretty good type of hack and slash game. But like but the publicity department on that game went nuts before, and they were promoting it as like, a revival in the concept of video gaming,
also a huge mistake.
One of the biggest things was he went on the web forum NeoGAF, and there was like, did you hear about this?
No, but I can imagine where this is going.
And he like posted, and he's like, he was saying something about, oh gosh, I missed this thread, but it's still quoted like. It was like, please tell us if you're for or against. He was trying to talk about the negative criticism or whatever, and like he just got an overwhelming like against.
Oh no!
And it just totally backfired. Sorry, this is the most obscure thing I've ever said, because I don't actually remember the wording of it, when it was, or who said it. So we might want to edit this part out. But if we do leave it in, I'll try to get some background on that.
Doesn't NeoGAF have like policies against self promotion, or is it different if you're an actual video game developer, not just some fans?
You can self promote, but you better be able to put your money where your mouth is.
Right. Okay.
And the response was horrible. And those are like the hardcore gamers, and like word of mouth spread. I don't think just because of this incident, but like these are the people who might have bought it.
Right.
Because the mainstream gamer didn't even know about this thing. And so it came out, and it had a few staunch defenders, and apparently people who liked, you know, hack and slash type games were getting new, better armor and stuff is very important. You know, they liked it, but it never sold enough copies to get those sequels, and pretty much killed Silicon Knights, which should have been spending that time developing Eternal Darkness 2. Insanier.
Was there any room to make a sequel after the end of that? All four endings?
It doesn't have to be a sequel, but like something like that.
Sure.
I mean, maybe not with the same characters or anything like that, but like they could definitely have gone into the Cthulhu mythos again.
Right.
And, was Cthulhu in that game? There was definitely a giant thing.
Yeah, no, it wasn't Cthulhu in particular, but it was in that same vein of
I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Existential cosmic horror. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
Some people say Cthulhu. You say Cthulhu, I say Cthulhu. Let's all get eaten by our Lord and Master.
Maybe they thought they were making a sequel, because I mean, a lot of reviews said that Too Human was an unthinkable cosmic horror.
Oh, that's not the same thing at all.
All right. Okay. Do you want to go into Rare?
Yeah, let's go into Rare, because this is another instance of a Nintendo second party that ended up trying to make its own things. And well, okay, so we mentioned GoldenEye. That was the first time that like I really knew Rare as a name, but they had done other stuff before that, like Battletoads, they're pretty famous for.
Snake Rattle and Roll.
Snake, no.
They were the first company to put nudity in an NES game.
I did not know that.
Taboo the Sixth Sense was like a tarot game, and one of the princesses was naked.
Was that Rare?
That was Rare.
Holy shnikes.
Yeah, I know.
Wow. So okay. So they did GoldenEye, and then of course they got in trouble for using parts of the Bond license that they weren't permitted to use. But it was still a wonderful game. So they ended up making their own Perfect Dark, sort of futuristic spy thriller on the same engine, which I loved. But because it wasn't some known property, people didn't like it as much or didn't buy it. I don't know what the deal was, but it was essentially the same game,
really,
but better.
It was really late in the Nintendo 64's lifespan at that point. Yeah. And to have it really be anything good, you needed the expansion pack.
Right. Yeah, there were you couldn't do multiplayer really without the expansion pack, and the graphics weren't as good if you didn't have.
I don't think you could do multiplayer at all without the expansion pack.
Yeah, there was like a really restrictive list of what you could do without it, and of course, I bought mine. To go with it. They also had the same design philosophy for Donkey Kong 64, which actually came packaged with that expansion pack.
Yeah, because Donkey Kong 64 wouldn't work without the expansion pack.
Like at all, yeah.
At all.
So Rare was stuck making these games for Nintendo, essentially, after a while. When they would try and do an original title, like Dinosaur Planet, Nintendo came in and said, you know, we could use another feather in our cap for the Star Fox franchise, because we haven't had a new game since the N64. This is like the GameCube now. They're making Dinosaur Planet 4. I think it was going to be an N64 game originally. Yep. But
if you go to Unseen 64, and we'll link that, you can see early screenshots of the N64 version.
Right. So this happened a lot. Unfortunately, you can imagine that at the same time Silicon Knights was trying to make Too Human, and then it had missed the PlayStation/N64 generation, and got pushed back to GameCube, and then never came out for that generation either.
Yep.
So So I don't know what really happened between Rare and Nintendo, but I would guess that kind of interference really put people off. Not just the developers, but the fans as well, because, you know, I was following both Two Human and Dinosaur Planet's developments, and it was they were both very strange stories to keep track of, and eventually Rare left and became a Microsoft studio.
I'm still not sure if Rare left or Nintendo just sold out its shares.
I think I read about this, like, something about Nintendo's contract to renew their relationship came up, and Nintendo didn't seem like they were going to do it. So yeah, so they cast about for a new buyer, and then Microsoft was like, well, we got this new version of our console coming up, we need some content for it, so snatch. But apparently there's this article about how that buyout essentially destroyed, like, really did Rare in. Like, if they thought Nintendo was bad, this really killed them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Rare still exists, but it's a shell.
Yeah.
I mean, what did they do recently? They do like, Kinect games. That's all they do anymore.
Oh, no.
That's a slap in the face to a company that, you know, had some of the best games on the N64.
I know.
And some of the most forgettable games on the GameCube and Xbox.
Yep.
Well, I mean, on the Xbox, they had an incredibly censored version. This is weird. An incredibly censored version of Conker.
Was it censored? It says live. Yeah. It says live and uncensored, I thought. Live and reloaded.
That's what they called it, but they censored out the swear words and...
It was censored on the N64 as well, wasn't it?
It was partially censored. It's more censored on the Xbox, which is crazy because Nintendo's reputation is the kiddie system and stuff.
Yeah, I guess I was remiss not to mention Conker's Bad Fur Day, because that was such a strange, fun game. I mean, granted...
That's development hell, too. Development hell.
Yeah. It was actually supposed to be like a platformer in the vein of Donkey Kong 64, you know, with the cute squirrel and whatnot. Like, but they're like,
yeah,
F this.
Banjo-Kazooie-like, yeah.
Yeah, they did Banjo-Kazooie as well, yeah. So
what's weird about... Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, they went from that platformer to just making fun of other conventions in, like, video games and... movies and such, so that it was just parody heaven, which for me, I love parodies and bad toilet humor. So there you go.
Conker was in production for a very long time, and as you said, it was originally going to be a little kiddie game, you know, so much so that they released a Game Boy version called Conker's Pocket Tale.
That's right. I forgot about
which was a kid's game,
right?
You got to wonder about, like, there must have been a couple kids who were, like, real big fans of that game, and then the N64 game came out, and they're like, oh, boy, another one, you know.
Oh, no, this is rated mature.
Yeah, I know. It was really weird, you know, because until that game actually came out, like, I saw a magazine article about it, about how they went in a totally new direction.
Yep.
And we're adding violence and toilet humor and swearing and stuff. And I was like, no, not again. Not going to be fooled again. It is an April edition of your magazine. Nope. This is not real. Not real. Even when it came out, I'm like, nope. It's still not real. I don't believe it.
Wow.
I still don't believe it.
No, I believe it, because I played that game and loved it. There's so much stuff in there. It's like a racing game. There's the platforming stuff, and it just does all kinds of different things besides the platforming. It was really obvious, like, the first several levels were like some slanted version of what the game was supposed to be like, and then they turned it into those things in, like, a first person shooter, and there was multiplayer for it too, which actually was a lot of fun, and I played a whole lot in college because I was old when it came out. But
all at 6 frames per minute.
Yeah, the frame rate was really bad, and I didn't realize how bad until I got the 360 or the Xbox version, which originally was not backwards compatible on the 360 until it was patched later. But playing that for a bit and then going back, it was like, oh, how did I play this? Even with the memory expansion pack, which that game required to even have those six frames per second.
So yeah, development hell. What's another one? Resident Evil 4.
Resident Evil 4.
Yep.
That one I've played, but I didn't realize was had such a problem. I know they had Code Veronica or whatever between 2 and
Well, 4. Originally, Devil May Cry was supposed to be Resident Evil 4.
What? No. What?
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. No, no. This is common knowledge, isn't it?
Not to me.
Well, they were shopping around for... I mean, Capcom was developed. Has, you know, the Resident Evil series was super popular. There was, you know, the first two, and then, like, Resident Evil Nemesis, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then Devil May Cry was going to be the sequel to Resident Evil, but it was so different. It was like such a totally different style of game that they changed it to be its own series.
Interesting.
Yeah. But it was originally supposed to be Resident Evil 4. So that's one of the reasons for the long delay.
Wow, I had no
idea.
And then
you know, they did Code Veronica, which was not Devil May Cry. It was not Resident Evil 4, but might as well have been. It's much more similar to the old games, you know. Mm. But, you know, they wanted it to be really special, and they were building it up, and then they switched over to I still don't know why, but Shinji Mikami all of a sudden decided, no, I like Nintendo systems now. And, like, they remember Resident Evil 2 got a port to N64?
That's right.
Which is weird. Like, it had full motion video, like, tons of it, too. They took a two disc CD-ROM game and put it on a N64 cartridge. Crazy.
Yeah, but they had to really neuter it to do that, didn't they?
Not so much. It
really?
It's better than that. But, like,
no.
the video is really grainy.
Right.
But, like, the
all the compression.
But the gameplay itself is fine. It actually looks better.
Well, I don't know if you call Resident Evil gameplay fine.
Authentic.
Authentic. There you go.
But they, you know, it was announced like right when GameCube. Well, not right when Game, but early on in the GameCube's life.
Sure.
That it was going to be made, and it went through so many revisions, like. You should see have you seen the videos for when the game was, you know, for some of the first footage of the game?
No, I haven't.
It had all these weird walking dolls and things. It was much less zombie and much more like ghost.
Interesting.
It looked fantastic. And it was not the like first person shootery Resident Evil 4 that we got.
Okay. It's
very, very much, it looked a lot more like the Resident Evil remakes.
Oh, sure. Is this why their remakes got done? Because they came out before Resident Evil 4, like the
Yeah.
I my first Resident Evil game was the remake for the GameCube. And it was, you know, apart from the controls, it was a real fun game and it looked really, really good. And
oh, yeah.
Then they made
Resident Evil Zero.
Zero. Yeah. But I never played Zero.
Yep.
So those both came out before Resident Evil 4 got done.
Yep.
So
they were both made in the time that Resident Evil 4 was being made.
That's so super fascinating too, because that's why Silicon Knights wasn't able to do their own stuff was because Capcom comes in and says, "Hey, we really need to show some love to Nintendo here." And Nintendo's like, "Okay, Silicon Knights, do this." And so it kind of all comes full circle all of a sudden.
Oh, yeah. But, I don't know, Resident Evil 4 was really nice. It was a really, really good game. But I'm very interested. I would love to have seen that original because the atmosphere and mood actually seemed really, really cool to me watching the trailers for it. But, like, Resident Evil 4 is a classic. It is, you know, so... I guess it worked out well, but, you know, it's kind of sad to see some ideas were kind of thrown. Well, maybe, no. I was going to say maybe in a future Resident Evil game, but the series has really taken a turn.
I haven't played 5. There's all that controversy around it because it's in Africa and lots of black people are getting killed.
Play the 3DS game.
No, but we talked about this. I can't. My save is going to be ruined. I won't be able
to go back.
No.
You're thinking Mercenaries. It's not Mercenaries. Don't buy that. Don't play it.
Okay.
But play Resident Evil Revelations.
Okay.
It's wonderful.
Oh, is that the one that was at TGS this last year?
Yes.
Okay.
It's so good. Okay. Oh, wow. Good. Good game. Play it with headphones, with the lights on. Oh,
why didn't nice we review game that?
What?
Why didn't we review that?
I don't know, but I've got it now. I got it as a birthday really present.
Great.
So.
Wow.
Oh, wait. There's something else with Rare, isn't there? There was another game.
Oh, Cameo Elements of Power?
Yeah. I remember seeing it on the website that Rare had set up for Rare's GameCube games. It was that and, you know, Dinosaur Planet. Sorry, Star Fox Adventures. Oh, I hated Star Fox Adventures so much. I think I went into it with... I didn't know the backstory of it. So I thought, Star Fox game, GameCube. Pre-order? Yes. Get it?
No.
What is this?
No, I was following it, and I think Nintendo Power even like was trying to put a really positive spin on the whole story, but it just seemed damning to me instead. Or maybe I was just reading IGN a lot by that time. Probably the latter. So,
yeah. But, yeah. So, Cameo, what was that? Was it an Xbox launch title? Like an Xbox 360 launch title?
It was a 360 launch title. Mm-hmm. And I played it a little bit in a store kiosk demo, and I did not care for it.
So, I remember it was in development for the GameCube. Then they switched development over to Xbox, but they must have had real trouble with the Xbox. Because they only released two games for that. Like, everyone was like, way to go, Microsoft. Good purchase there.
Yeah, they released that, and they released Perfect Dark Zero, which could have been a good game. I don't know what happened. By that point, Halo had already come out. So they had that to compete with.
It looked like Perfect Dark Zero was rushed to make the launch.
Yeah.
Because Rare usually can delay, but you know, Microsoft must have been like, just give me what you got right now. we'll do the rest with DLC.
Yeah, right? So did the original Xbox have achievements, or was that new with the 360? I never played.
I don't think it did.
Yeah.
I mean, individual games probably had them because
there was no unified system
for a while.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this is one of the first games to have achievements, and a lot of them have to do with multiplayer, but no one ever played multiplayer, and it was impossible for some reason to customize your character. So you had lots of these Joanna Darks running around, all identical to each other.
Just like real life.
Yeah. The frame rate was pretty good, but there was just something about the mechanics that was crazy and wonky that I didn't like so much. And the second level to that game, I got stuck. Like, I did not know how to finish the second level, so I just got angry and gave up. As it turns out, I found out that a lot of people, I guess in the transition to Microsoft, left to make actual fun games like the Time Splitter series.
Yeah, Time Splitters was great.
Yeah, so if you want a game that's like the spiritual successor to GoldenEye and Perfect Dark, those are the games to play because they're hilarious and super fun.
I do like that. I go, Time Splitters was great, and I want our listeners to know that it may have sounded like I've actually played it right there.
Oh,
but I haven't. But I watched someone enjoy it.
I have. I played in the with the co-op, I believe. You know, it actually reminds me quite a bit of the style reminds me quite a bit of Beyond Good and Evil, which is a different company entirely, but it's the same kind of aesthetic and humor, I guess.
Funny you should mention Beyond Good and Evil, because Beyond Good and Evil 2 is a prime example of development hell.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Why? I'm aware of it, because it was like, is it going to happen? It's not going to happen. And then they tease these like images and video, and it's like, we're going to make it. Oh, we're not really going to make it. We're gonna make it now.
I think that one might be one of the sad, unsuccessful development hell stories, because it may be revived later on, but like as it currently stands, development has stopped, I believe.
Right. And it wasn't a really popular game when it came out anyway, but it was a really good game despite that, and critically acclaimed.
Cult classic, yeah.
So I can understand them not wanting to pump money into it, whereas they put all kinds of money into the Sands of Time series, and I really wish that they had just stopped after the first one. So.
Yep.
The first one and the self-titled release that came out afterwards are the only two that I really want to play ever again. Because then that game became Assassin's Creed, essentially. So.
Yeah. Other games in development hell? Final Fantasy Versus 13? Or Final Fantasy 13
now, Versus? Now, I hadn't heard about this until you mentioned it to me. So what is this?
You really haven't heard of
this? I hadn't heard of this. I'm sorry. You know, we talked to those guys from Squaresoft. Sorry, yes. Square Enix. And it never came up. So.
Well, they were on the Dragon Quest team. But anyway.
Oh, they were the Enix half. Got it.
Yeah. Which, the better half. Oh, sorry.
Ooh.
That's going to get some hate mail. But
so okay. if we talk negatively about Final Fantasy 13 and 13-2, they won't be too upset with us. They'll be like, yeah, we're the Dragon Quest guys. It's okay. We agree.
But Final Fantasy 13 was announced to be not a game, but a series of games.
Ooh.
Just like the Final Fantasy 7, they're reevaluating. You know, they're going through and making a bunch of really bad.
aren't those all done now, though? Because I never played a single one of them.
Well, they kind of stopped selling, so I guess they kind of are done. But anyway,
yeah.
Final Fantasy 13 was going to have the main game, which did come out, and some weird, poorly selling sequel, which did come out. But what was supposed to come out very shortly after, or even at the same time, was a game called Final Fantasy 13 Versus.
Yeah.
And this was going to be an action RPG.
Huh.
done by the team that made Kingdom Hearts.
Oh.
Which is why Kingdom Hearts wasn't coming. You know, everyone's like, Kingdom Hearts 3, Kingdom Hearts 3. And Nomura kept, he's the guy who's responsible for making all Final Fantasy characters look like David Bowie. But
must be a hard job.
But anyway,
Bowie looked on the cover of Ziggy Stardust. Let's do that.
But anyway, Nomura was the Kingdom Hearts director, and he's like, "We'll do Kingdom Hearts as soon as we finish up Final Fantasy Versus 13." And that's all Final Fantasy 13 Versus 13 meant in my mind, because it was to me, it didn't seem to be a game I wanted to play or wanted to buy. It seemed that its only purpose of existing was keeping me from getting a new Kingdom Hearts.
Okay.
But every now and then, there'll be some news on it. Like, oh yes, it's still happening. But like, now that Final Fantasy 13-2 bombed so hard, I mean, it didn't. Okay, I would love to have a bomb like that. I mean, it sold over a million copies. If our DVD bombed that hard,
right.
but it sold like less than half of what the game before it did.
Okay. Oh, that's not good. Well, it's out in the States too, and I know people who've played it, and actually like it better than 13 proper.
Oh yeah.
But I honestly don't have any statistics on the sales. So.
But, well, they're still trying to sell out their first shipment in Japan, and it's been dropped down to like 1,000 yen. So.
Oh, that's like $12 now. So.
Yeah. For a brand new copy, it's
good.
Really. Not a great sign, but. But so I don't know if Final Fantasy 13 Versus will ever get finished. But if it, I don't know, because like they've had some bad Final Fantasy dealings lately. Like Final Fantasy 14 was an epic failure. They might just want to move on to 15 and kind of.
Maybe they should put all their effort into Dragon Quest.
Yes. Yes. No. No. Keep the Square team away from the Dragon Quest team.
Oh yeah. Well, last story. Who is being developed by the original Final Fantasy creator is coming to Wii finally. They just announced that at like Nintendo's big recent press event, Nintendo Direct, going to come out to the States finally, which means that two out of the three. Operation Rainfall games are seeing a North American release, which is fantastic.
Yeah, way better than I thought when that started. I was hoping we'd get Xenoblade.
Which we will next month.
You know, I know. And like, hey, are you getting that for me for my birthday?
me personally or the podcast listeners?
Somebody.
No, I can get it for you.
I haven't pre-ordered yet, so I gotta...
Yeah, I'll play this one for you. I'll do it at the Nintendo store because I don't want to support GameStop. Sorry, GameStop.
But no, through the Nintendo store is a good one anyway, because that sends a much more direct message to Nintendo.
Nintendo, hey, direct.
And Xseed is doing, so I think Last Story is going to get, I don't know if they're using the original translation or if Xseed's going to put their own spin on it. They do good translations, mm-hmm. but I worry that the advertising budget's going to be pretty low.
Yeah.
I love Xseed, though. Good people. Good people. They when Midway was like, nah, we don't care about Shadow Hearts anymore, they're like, we'll do it.
Nice.
Shadow Hearts. Shadow Hearts. That's a podcast in itself. You played Shadow Hearts, right?
Of course not.
but it's from an SNK RPG saga.
I just learned that there was a King of Fighters 13, and apparently it's not new at all.
Dude, I played it at like three TGSs ago.
I wasn't at that one.
Oh, you weren't. You weren't. I got a T-shirt.
All right. We'll talk about going to TGS 2012 because we might get more T-shirts. But I'm guessing it's not going to happen.
Probably not.
Probably not.
unless your baby can operate the camera by then.
We'll see. He does have very large hands.
But anyway, why development hell? Because, well, it seems Famicom Dojo is having a bit of development hell as well.
Oh yeah, so even before my newborn son came along and my time for doing this kind of thing got reduced, we decided we wanted to do this whole spate of new videos for you guys, which we mentioned at the top of the show here. Yep. So we started season two officially with our Denshi Mail segment back in February of 2009. So it's yep. 3 years later, almost to the day. And season two has two full episodes out of eight released.
Well, yeah, but
I know,
like,
there's
not counting the 3D special as an episode is criminal.
No, I agree. When I say that, we had eight videos we wanted to do.
Yeah.
We had spent a lot of time like figuring out like what worked well on YouTube and what didn't. So what we ended up doing was making a bunch of supplementary videos based on that. So they'd be like Denshi mails that might answer a question that the show brought up. There's these supplementals every single time that sort of talks about a peripheral or a version of the consoles that we discussed that didn't like fit into our main historical story flow. And we're not going to do that anymore. I mean, we're going to finish the episodes as we wrote them, but it became such a development process, and each episode essentially is like three times as long as like one that was from season one.
And that's the thing. We're trying to make each episode continually better than the previous episode. Yeah. And I think for the most part, we've been able to do that. But maybe that's not as important as getting out four or five episodes in the same time.
Exactly. So we're putting our money where our mouth is. Instead of just being like, oh, 3D Realms, trying to make the best video game possible, we're just we're still going to release those videos as envisioned. But in the meantime, we're going to do shorter, more to the point, and more. I don't want to say relevant because it's still retro stuff, but definitely hues more to interest on a particular topic, because we cover a lot of stuff in our season two videos. Like we talked about like the Mega Drive and the Genesis and like Nintendo's response to that. And so it's not really just about reviewing a console. It's like it's gaming history.
Yeah.
And we want to focus more on specific hardware, specific games, especially doing the 3D special. We got to actually review games, which we don't really do in our show very much, and we want to do more of, essentially. So we want to bring you tips and tricks for new and retro games, including things you can do with the GameCube menu. So
finally.
I know, only 10 years too late. Although, you know, one of the most recent secrets was only discovered about a couple of years ago.
I get down on some of these companies for taking forever to release their games. But like, now being in a kind of, not game development, but a development position myself, I can kind of understand it. You know what I mean?
Well, here's the difference, though, is that is that this is their day job. They go into work and they do this stuff all day, and they still can't get anything done. Whereas we're doing this in what little free time we have because Famicom Dojo is fun, but it ain't paying the bills. So,
or breaking even.
Or breaking even. So, but yeah, we want to do as much as we can to make the fans happy who have been really patient. Thank you, first of all. Super, super patient. So patient that like our last episode did not come out the week it was supposed to. Even though I think we mentioned, for the first time ever, and it's, you know, now that we both have kids. But it did finally come out, and we have one of our first reruns, and we're going to be doing more of those. So that's part of what we're going to try and do is keep doing the podcast, keep doing new stuff, but we might not both be in every episode, and we might do reruns from time to time.
We're going to try to have something every week. Yeah.
So even on weeks where we don't have anything brand new, you know, we have a huge backlog of like Rebel in Japan that we can start putting up.
There's plenty of stuff that's new to you.
Yes. So
unless you've been following my work for the last 6 years.
Yeah, there's that. Because a lot of this did come from 4-Color Rebellion, but you know, that was 6 to 7 years ago.
We'll add some new stuff to it. I'm going to update some of that stuff, and it'll be a reason to keep. I know everybody's hitting the unsubscribe button right now, but you know, and as soon as things calm down a little here, we'll go back to doing episodes like we're doing now, all the time. And you know, still, if we have some time, there'll be new episodes mixed in with our reruns.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking like at worst we might have like one rerun for every three new episodes right now.
Yep.
But
it's just something to give us a little breathing space.
Yeah, so we can finish this video work because I think when we first started the podcast, we were like, it's not going to cut into our video making time. And that was in May of 2011, and we released one major new video. So, I mean, you know, granted, we had like 20 TGS videos also, but one piece of original content. Yeah. Some of those haven't been released yet just due to time constraints and I think by the time we released one of our last TGS videos, it was already a month after the show was over. So there's not a whole lot left that hasn't been released.
There's at least 5 or 6, though.
Yeah, there's a bunch of interviews that are really fascinating and don't, you know, aren't necessarily tied to releases. But we really should get those up sooner rather than later.
But anyway, thanks everyone for listening and for supporting us. Things are busy right now in the families of Vink and Sean Orange, but we haven't forgotten about you. And thanks for all the well wishes.
In a particular thank you to those who are being patient for the last episode being released. We have one of the aforementioned Rebel in Japan segments. Vink gets pwned by a car. mentioned that in that last episode, and there's a little supplemental about exclusive to the website about the fate of Color Dreams and what that turned into. So there's two pieces of exclusive content for you guys who are so wonderfully patient.
Nice.
Yeah.
So if you didn't listen to those last week, please listen to them now.
Yes, because they're fascinating. And as I mentioned in the last episode as well, there's lots of exclusive content to the website, so if you're not checking that out, be sure to do so. Always check our show notes on famicomdojo.tv to find those things, and you know, leave wonderful comments, as well as, you know, Twitter and Facebook and our YouTube channel, That's Orange, and of course the free iTunes storefront where people have been leaving comments and rating, which is awesome.
Thank you so much.
Ever since September, people have like really been taking to doing that. So I want to encourage you guys who haven't done it to chime in, because you find a lot of fans feel the way you do about this show, and it lets us know that you really like it, which honestly is a little shocking to me.
Ouch.
No. I mean, I have fun doing this show, but it's not like super structured like This American Life or, even some other like gaming podcasts out there who have like industry people, industry guests every week and stuff like that. It's just a couple of guys talking about video games and how to juggle that with like the responsibility of being adult and having a family and all that. And people are really interested in those topics. So, and we also apparently know stuff about video game history, which, you know, I guess that's cool too.
Yeah, I suppose. I picked up I just ordered yesterday a 750-page book on the history of adventure games. I can't
wait. Wow.
For me, that's light reading, though. I love video game history. Just love it.
If you guys haven't read this, something really fascinating about video game history is Masters of Doom, which is about id Software's beginnings right here in Madison, Wisconsin, actually. They started up and partnered with Raven Software, which still exists and is part of Activision now. And I have some friends who work there. And that's a pretty cool thing to be near as well. But the id guys started right around the time that Nintendo was popular. They go back that far, and like one of their first things they tried to do was like bring Mario to the PC. Now, not to actually release the game itself, but just because PCs at the time weren't supposed to be able to handle that kind of graphical prowess. And John Carmack found a way because he's a genius.
Yes.
So. And it also tells a fun story about like how like one of the developers was Mormon, and they asked all these questions about what it's like to be Mormon. Do you wear the magical underwear and all that stuff? I don't know why that stuck out in my head. I think I was because I was my girlfriend was at the time was Mormon. So good times. These are the kinds of things that we think about and talk about all the time. So if you like that sort of thing, keep listening week after week to the Famicom Dojo podcast.
All right, thank you very much.
See you guys. Well,
Famicom Dojo.